Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Beiser, the owner and lead writer. Join me this week, Game Wisdom site designer and artist for Smugbee Games, Ken Thorne.
Hey there.
So, Ken, how has your week been so far?
Pretty busy. Been catching up on some of my backlog.
Yeah, my backlog's still overbearing me, and of course, the new XCOM game's been taking up my time.
Well, yeah, that's it's the one they add mechs, right?
Mm-hmm. Mechs and gene splicing and all kinds of good stuff, which we'll talk about later on in the cast.
Okay.
So, I know yesterday I kind of posted about we were trying to get a guest on, but unfortunately, time permitting, we couldn't find anyone. So, by the time this post goes up, I'm going to be asking around my circle, see if I can get some people for the next few weeks, or I'll just have to bug the people that I've already had on.
Yeah, it's fine to have repeat guests. I think it's always good to get an update on what the devs are doing. Especially ones that talked about current projects that can give us an update on what the new projects are, too.
So to begin with, let's talk a little bit about some news that's been happening. And I guess the big news is it's either about to be released or it has been released, the PlayStation 4.
Ah, yes, the PlayStation 4. It looks like, to me, it was a big launch in some sites, but, I don't really feel that mania when the PS3 came out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We haven't heard anyone getting stabbed or anything or getting robbed for the PS3. Or PS4, I mean.
Yeah, maybe it's just by the fact that I've been more interested in indie games, but this whole recent console generation has just bored the hell out of me. I don't even remember, the last time I really got excited about a console game.
Well, I think even though the PS3 finished third or whatever, I think they had better exclusives. I think that's what Sony won with. And in the end, I'm more compelled to buy a PS3 over an Xbox because, everything for Xbox came out for PC for the most part.
And don't forget, Xbox Live is a monthly service, while the PlayStation 3, I think at least for that, the PSN network was free, other than the Gold subscription that gets you free games and stuff.
PlayStation Plus.
Okay. And what am I hearing, that the PSN is going to be paid this time for the PS4?
It's for certain services. I think it's only $5 a month. Xbox Live was like 12 or something. So it's much cheaper, and you get a lot of free games with it too, which is great. All Xbox Live did was allow you to just use the service. And I think PlayStation could have made much more money if they did charge, but they're trying to, again, because the console was already that expensive at the time. Why would they financially charge on top of it?
Yep, it's better for them to basically get people to adopt the system rather than scare them away with pricing.
Yeah, I think adding a bonus feat, like a bonus service, or not bonus service, but enhanced service for a cost, I think was the better direction anyways. And I feel it's still a choice with PSN. You can still do mostly everything. But I think multiplayer stuff is now set only if you have PSN Plus or whatever.
That's pretty much going to be a big deal breaker for me, just because of the fact that I don't like to pay for that monthly subscription.
I think it's like a certain kinds of games. I have no idea. Again, I don't have PS4, so I don't know how the service is going. Mm-hmm. And I also heard that there was some, I guess PSN went down for a little bit, but went right back up within an hour or two. So that's cool. So usually people get crushed for days after a server launch like that. You know what I mean?
And I remember Sony, didn't they have their big hacking issue a year or so ago?
It was more than a year ago, but yeah, I mean, I think they've obviously updated their servers. Originally, they had an unsecure Apache server that anyone could do an injection into. So, it was kind of their fault for not putting enough money into security. Take some of that money out of marketing, put that money into security.
And the Xbox One, that is supposed to be coming out, I think, in a few days, right, or this month.
Huh?
The Xbox One's supposed to be coming out, I think, this month.
Isn't that next week?
Yeah, probably.
They're back to back.
Let's take a look. Yeah, I really haven't been that interested in the console market lately, which is surprising.
I was more excited for the Kinect 2 as a developer, or that does development of the VR. I want to see how awesome it is. I have a lot of cool demos for it.
Alright, so the Xbox One is coming out on the 22nd, so in about 6 days.
Aw, man. I am so underwhelmed.
Yeah.
I do want that Kinect too, though. Maybe I can pawn it off somebody that hates the Kinect. I'm like, hey, man, you don't want that. It's going to spy on you. Give it to me, and I'll use it for whatever reason.
Isn't the Kinect 2, required hookup for the Xbox One now?
No. They actually, when they were doing their, damage control after E3, they said that is not required, and you can turn it off if But you'll be missing out on a lot of cool features, they said.
You mean talking to your system?
Or getting spied on by the NSA.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah, This console generation, I mean, I haven't heard any, like, really big names yet, which is surprising. I mean, when we had the PS3, Xbox 360, and the Wii launch, you know, they at least had something big to show for it. Nintendo had Zelda, Sony, I think, didn't they have, like, a Ratchet and Clank game for the PlayStation 3?
Well, the new Ratchet and Clank game just came out for the PS3, the last one.
Yeah.
But, they have Killzone for PS4.
Yeah, I remember Killzone had some controversy for the PS3 launch when they were supposedly, I think, upscaling the graphics for the demo footage and it didn't look anything like it for the real version.
Oh yeah, that was true. But you know, I think at least for the launches or near launch or the first week month titles, I think there's a couple exclusives that look really cool. Like Titanfall is now exclusive entirely only for Microsoft now, right? Yeah. And then the other one is Dead Rising 3. Is that exclusive?
Yeah,
it looks kind of. They took out the fun of the game though. It looks like there's still like crazy things you can do, but like the color is gone. All the beautiful, vibrant, all over the place colors of that mall is gone for like bland survival one. You know,
browns and grays.
Bunch of browns and grays, right? I feel like that's a tragedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine to be more realistic, but at the same time, you don't have to lose your style too, because they had to set style to it.
And so far, there hasn't been any real news about, like, backwards compatibility. I know Xbox One's definitely not backwards compatible with 360. And Sony, they were sort of hinting that they were going to do, like, a streaming service with the cloud.
Yes.
But I haven't heard anything more developed than that.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to do. I mean, they did buy that service, so I assume that's what's going to happen. But the question is, do you have to rebuy all your games? Because that would suck terribly.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like, if they were to announce service at like, you know, either to buy the games again, like if it's all digital, I wonder if they'll ever put their games on sale. Do you think they would?
That's good.
Because a lot of those PS3 games are probably discounted because, you know, they're old, they're last generation, and there's a lot of copies out. So I wonder if they're going to actually do that. But if PS4 does offer a service for backwards compatibility, I would definitely buy a PS4 because there's a lot of exclusives for the PS3 that were really cool, like Little Big Planet. And they had, you know, the, I guess, Quadratic Dream games, which is like Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah.
But specifically, I think Last of Us is a big puller for me because it looked pretty awesome, pretty grotesque. And I was watching some clips of it, and the story itself is pretty compelling. So.
And The Last of Us, that was done by Naughty Dog, and they, of course, did Uncharted.
Uh-huh.
And originally, they did Crash Bandicoot, so it's kind of funny to track their progression over the years.
Oh, they also did a game called Rings of Power for the Genesis, where they put a nude girl in it with a code. but they just teased out a new Uncharted game, too. That's teased, officially.
Yeah, Uncharted, I just got really tired of it. It was a very cinematic game, but it didn't really seem to have much depth to it.
I have never played it, but everyone says the second one is the greatest, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Either.
The Tomb Raider itself, I really, by the way, the update of Tomb Raider, everyone kept calling it like Uncharted, but I felt, you know, I still felt like Tomb Raider was unique in its own right. I think it did a pretty good job.
Yeah, Tomb Raider was more open world. I think it would probably been closer to like Arkham Asylum than Uncharted if we were to compare design wise.
I see. But yeah, I can't think of any other PS4 exclusives that really make me excited.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that, and this is more like honestly, I feel like the Xbox One has more to offer, but the Kinect and the way that you can interact with your system, even though the new PS4 controller has the trackpad or a touchpad, I think that's pretty neat too.
Yeah. I was at GameStop earlier today, and I was trying out, they had this game Knack or Crack.
Knack.
Yeah, and it just seemed very stupid, if I have to give my honest opinion. I was trying to play it, and for some reason, the dodge, like, the guy only has one hit point, but the dodge wasn't basically catching, wasn't triggering to avoid attack, so I was getting killed really quickly, and it just got really tiresome. I think I have been seeing poor reviews for it.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty much a glorified tech demo put into a game form. I mean, the creator, or like the father of the PS4, was in charge of this game, but he was so excited to show all these particles exploding, and how powerful that a system is, and how much pictures it can hold, and all that kind of stuff. But they, you know, realized that, you know, it's better to plan the game out beforehand than to just, you know, use a tech demo to create a really half-baked game. So, I mean, I think when it was first announced, everyone was very underwhelmed, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when it came out, they're even more underwhelmed.
Yeah.
So, right. If so, they, I mean, if go ahead.
It sort of reminds me of that game Malice or something like that. It was supposed to be like a game was originally for Xbox, then it got delayed to Xbox 360, and then like it finally came out like 4 or 5 years into the console cycle, and then no one like cared about it.
It's probably like the Xbox 360's what it's the game that Rare made. Something of Power?
Kamiko?
Cameo or something like that. Yeah, that one. It's equivalent to that game. We're like, it's just a bleh. It's the bleh game. You can't hate it, but it's hard to enjoy it because it just feels really rushed, and it feels very not really rushed. It's more like poorly thought out. That's what I would say.
As you were just saying a few minutes ago regarding the Xbox One seemed to have, I guess, more of a unique factor to it compared to the PS4, I think to me this is sort of where Nintendo has sort of their strength, because the Wii U has such that of a unique system with that whole touchscreen or the tablet idea to it. But I just wish we would see more developers make use of that. Because I remember, I think we said this in an earlier cast, that it really seems that you only need two consoles for the generation. So either like a Nintendo console and then pick one of the PS or the Xbox. Because those two are somewhat interchangeable, other than, as you said, the Xbox One's Kinect 2 feature.
But the PS4 has better exclusives,
Yeah.
usually. And I think that I think the problem with Nintendo is not only are they kind of behind the times, but it's mostly that they lack the dev support that the PS4 and PS I mean PS PS3 and Xbox 360 had, you know?
Yep,
And I
definitely.
think if they had more dev kits out for the Wii U, I think you would have more interesting games come out too. Because I feel like a lot of the games that do come out are just rehashes of games on tablets already, so I feel like there should be a game built from the ground up for it.
The problem that has always been with Nintendo is that the best games on Nintendo system are usually from Nintendo, and it's just very hard for them to build a stable library. I mean, with the Wii, I think I've bought like six, maybe seven games from them, and I think four or five of them were from Nintendo. I know I bought Monster Hunter and Trauma Center. I think that was it. I think those were the only two like third-party games I actually bought for the system.
Right, and you know, I think actually your attachment rate is actually higher because I feel like at least according to the numbers, they have the lowest attachment rate games to your system. So, because I think a lot of people bought it for Wii Sports, but the Wii U was just so badly marketed and was so under the radar that I mean, I feel bad that what happened to them because it was so obvious just from any standpoint that calling your system Wii U and not saying anything new about it is going to get confused for being like an add-on for the Wii, you know?
And they're still behind technology-wise or infrastructure-wise for online play and online capabilities. I mean, I think to me, Sony probably won the online competition for at least the PS3 generation, as we were talking about with the PSN Plus and all the value that it added to it compared to Xbox Gold.
Yeah, but I think everyone agrees that Xbox Live is the better service, but it's a service at a high cost, like a very high cost that PSN does already. But I think the hack is what it makes everyone reconsider them being the best of the online services. But everyone's in unanimous agreement that the Wii or Nintendo has the worst online services. I mean, and again, and I knew someone that worked there, and again, they told me that the reason why they had such crappy friend code systems is they wanted to stave off pedophiles.
Yeah, Nintendo has, at least for the last two generations, they've been basically in this push and pull contest between trying to make them family friendly and trying to make a system that appeals to people who play video games. And it seems like they keep leaning more towards family friendly, but that's not really a system. I think we talked about this on the last cast, that if you try to make your game or your whatever as accessible as, focus group friendly as possible, you're basically going to dilute what makes it original and unique.
I think that's always been a problem, though, because even you could go all the way back to the Super Nintendo age, right? If they start focusing on childish games and stuff, your system's going to be seen, you know, for children alone, you know? You're going to alienate everyone like 14 and above or 13 and above or whatever. If you target the older demographic, it will eventually, you know, trickle down to or, you know, go down to the younger demographic that look up to these kids.
And I've been saying this for a while now, but I would really love for Nintendo to basically create a mature game. I'm talking like a mature, complex game. Because we know that Nintendo has a great design team. I mean, Super Mario Galaxy was great. The Zelda games were always greatly designed. But they basically shackle themselves with being forced to make a game that's E for everyone. Now, that's of course not to say that you can't have a complex game that's rated E. But as we were just saying, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot before the race begins if you're going to sell and say, we're going to make, you know, an E game and we're not going to touch anything else.
Exactly. And I think another problem is that they, not only do they do that, but they keep pulling from their library from, you know, the original IPs from the 80s and 90s. And they're not adding anything to the game. They're just adding a 3D element to it. Mm-hmm. And all these new Super Mario Brothers that they keep coming out continuously, I think people are growing really tired of them.
Yeah. I played New Super Mario. I think it was the DS or the 3DS one. And it just felt like the same exact thing as before. Other than Mario has like a few new moves. But it definitely lacked a lot of the creativity we saw with Super Mario Galaxy. Now, about reusing IPs, I have been hearing good things about the new Zelda game. A Link to the Past, A New World, something.
Yeah, it's got extremely high ratings. I mean, Game Trailers gave it 9.8. Eurogamer gave it a 10 out of 10, so.
Yeah, they're actually saying that Nintendo had basically reinvented Zelda. They actually changed the design. Like, they're saying that dungeons now require multiple, you have to use multiple items instead of each dungeon being designed around one item or one gimmick. So, I mean, Nintendo, they can do original things. It just seems like you really have to pull teeth over there to get them to do that. I mean, the last really original IP from them would arguably be Pikmin, and that was a GameCube IP.
Right. And again, I mean, there's some rehashes that I really do enjoy. Like Wind Waker HD, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. It actually looks really good. It holds up. The design was already very good. The style was already there. Just upgrading it to HD was a great benefit. And they did a couple of reworks, right? Because there was like a quest to pick up, you know, 7 maps that lead you to the Triforce, but they cut it down to 3.
Yeah.
There's also an item to allow you to sail faster.
Nice.
Stuff like that. So that all that stuff helps.
Yep, and as you just said, with the Wind Waker still holding up, that's always been Nintendo's really good strength for design. Their games hold up design-wise. I mean, Super Mario World is still an amazing 2D platform, and it has aged really well. The same you could say for most of the Zelda games, I would say, from A Link to the Past on. I can't even remember the last time I played the original Zelda or Zelda 2, so I can't comment on that. But with Super Mario Galaxy, that's a game that I like to go back and play again, like once a while, because it still holds up. But it's just so hard for them. I think they basically get stuck into a rut. Like, and we've said this a lot with developers focusing on sequels. If you know that, you know, Mario or Call of Duty or whatever is going to sell well, it makes it very easy to just get stuck into keep making games like that and not experimenting anymore.
Well, that's the whole Asian mantra, actually. It's all about iteration, not innovation, right? And that's why a lot of, and this is something from, you know, my scholarly days, is that a lot of people send students abroad for the reason of teaching them that concept, because in their school, it's all about testing and about that and not thinking outside the box. But all the great innovations and stuff comes from American companies, you know, like, you know, things like Google and Facebook and all those like paradigm shifting companies are from here. So, yeah. And I think the same kind of issue comes with going the safe route for Nintendo, always looking back for old IP, always just adding one or two things, but never really pushing the envelope past something where to its full potential, you know?
Yep, and of course Nintendo can get away with that because the quality is so high. But as we're seeing, that you really can't have a console with only 5 games on it. And that's what we really are seeing with Nintendo, with the Wii and the Wii U, is that yes, it has a lot of games, but how many games could you say are actually quality?
Exactly. And I think that what Nintendo should do is, again, reach out to indies. I think they need to, just like what the PS4 has been doing, is like, you know, meeting them face-to-face, giving them a kid, talking to them, giving them contacts, all that stuff would really, really help.
Yeah.
Because right now, people don't see the Wii U as a next-gen console. They see it as a middle-gen.
They see more like Wii 1.5.
Or like the Jaguar, something like that. Or the Sega Saturn, that's weird in between. Actually, more like, they don't. I think people will probably see it more like the 32X. Or the Neptune.
And people are saying that the Wii U is probably their Nintendo's second biggest failure since the Virtual Boy. I think Virtual Boy only lasts like 8 months before they pulled it.
Well, their goal is to sell like 7 million. He's like, we're gonna reach 7 million by the end of the year. I'm like, would
No.
you think crazy? I mean, or actually, probably the end of the next 2 quarters, something like that. The point is that it's no way it's happening. They're either delusional or they really believe it. But either way, I don't see it happening according to their numbers and their rates. No way they would get to that number.
Now, one thing that you do have to say about Nintendo is that despite their consoles, they've always been strong in the handheld market, and the 3DS has steadily improved. We've seen a number of great games for it, and it seems that developers are more attracted to like their handhelds rather than their consoles because it's more of a traditional system. Even though you have that 3D, you still have the traditional control scheme to work around with.
Right. And I think that, I mean, there's a lot of great quality games that come out for it, right? I mean, especially that Pokemon X and Y, people are been raving and waiting for those games. And I think that what's keeping them afloat is our handheld market.
Yep, I've been saying that for years now. No, I think I've been saying it since pretty much the Wii era that their handhelds have really been keeping them afloat. I mean, Pokemon, I think that if it wasn't for Pokemon, Nintendo may have gone under during the GameCube generation. Because the GameCube was largely seen as third place for most of that. That was the first generation I think Nintendo was really hurting compared to what was going on with the PlayStation 2 and Xbox.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, people were saying that, oh, because of the Wii U, the company's having huge losses. Or not huge, but like having an actual loss instead of their positive they had for many, many years. But I think it's not because of the Wii U. I think it's mostly because, I mean, that's part of it, but I think it's mostly because of the mobile market, the smartphone market becoming bigger and bigger and inching out, the reason to have it handheld. And it really destroyed the Vita.
Yeah, the Vita, I mean, I've heard people who bought it and they like it, but like the same thing, I think, ironically, what's happened with the Vita, I think, is what we're seeing sort of with the Wii U and the Wii, that it's got a few good games, but that's about it. There's just, I really haven't heard of a substantial library for the Vita, much less the PSP did have some really good games. I will admit, I love Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Ogre, and of course the Persona games came out. But other than that, I really haven't heard of a game that would make me want to buy a Vita.
Well, I think it's funny for people that when the Vita came out, they were waiting in line. I'm like, waiting in line? Oh no, yeah, by the way, I think the reason why that we didn't hear about all the stabbings and people being run over and stampedes for the PS4 is because you can order them online. People can ship it to your house. You can already pre-order on Amazon as soon as the E3 was over. So there you go.
Now, with the Wii and the Wii U, you're just saying regarding indies, it is kind of surprising that Sony is going to the indie route because they've always been a very, I think, closed system. They've only wanted people to work for them, to make stuff for them. And as we were talking about last week, they're going to be developing their own version, quote unquote, of the Oculus Rift. So it'll be interesting to see how well indies are going to be treated once they start coming out.
Well, I think at least watching some videos, I forget who the guy was, but there's someone who is pushing that initiative that really gets it because I feel like they're giving this guy, well, he's the guy in that video where they say, this is how you share with the PlayStation and they hand the game over. Remember that video, the white guy? I really should know his name, but that guy. But he with a couple behind the scenes and a couple of interviews, and I think there was a Giant Bomb podcast with him, and he was talking about how he was all about meeting up, talking to these people, sending people out, getting contacts, and then some responses from actual indies that are saying like, this is a much better service, the system's really great. I think that they're starting to realize that they're pigeonholing themselves, right? And they need to look at their Western counterparts for some influence. So it's cool.
And of course, talking about consoles, we still have the Steam Box coming out. I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that's going to play a factor with all the next-gen consoles already on the market.
I think they're going to kind of compete with, not really compete directly, but it sounds like they might fall into the same problem as the Ouya and all those systems. The only benefit they have over the Ouya and all that is Steam. You have so many members. I'm sure everyone would like to be willing to give it a try, right?
And supposedly, people are going to be getting like possible copies of the Steam Box to test. Anyone who signed up for the hardware Steam group or whatever.
Done and done. Hopefully, I get it.
Yep, me too. I jumped through all their little hoops and whatnot. That would be pretty cool. But as you said, like the Ouya, that I think hasn't been really doing that much.
And yeah, and they gave everyone free credits for people to spend and actually buy games in hopes that they'll buy more games. You know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot of developers that are really fed up with it because they feel put all this work into the heavy requirements of the Ouya and then not and don't get any returns back. And that stinks, you know? But I think that a lot of people, if it wasn't Valve that did made Steambox or made this announcement, everyone would just laugh at them and call them like, this is crazy. It's like creating a third party in the US political system, you know? No, you're throwing away your vote. But people have so much good faith in Valve, and Steam is so successful, they actually have a real shot and change the landscape.
Well, when you think about, people were saying that same "you're crazy" about Valve when Steam first came out. I mean, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, why should I sign up for Steam? What's it going to do for me? And I know a lot of people were just taken off by it when Half-Life 2 was required, but then Steam and Valve basically proved everyone wrong, and now it's become a major foundation of the PC industry.
Yeah, and I think it's really revived. PC game was never dead, but really brought it to more, really grew the base, you know?
Especially among indie developers, because as we've said, this digital distribution has been pivotal for indies to basically have a chance at competing in the market. Now you don't need to worry about a retail store or dealing with shelf space. You can be put into a virtual store and sell your game within seconds, as opposed to hoping someone will find your copy hidden behind, you know, Barbie's bake sale game at Target.
Yeah, and patches are super easy. The system itself is really versatile. They really love it. They just really hate all these people that are new and are trying to get into Steam. I think that's the problem. Getting your game onto Steam and then getting disheartened when you see games like The War Z slash Infestation and Garry's Mod go on Steam, you know?
Yep, definitely. I mean, I when I spoke with Steven Peeler, he's the one at Soldat. He does Drox Operative, Dyn's Curse, and those great games. He's been having nothing but trouble getting on Steam, and really, it's a shame because his games are amazing. They're really great action RPGs, and they pretty much were my fix for ARPG after Diablo 3 just let me down so much. But he has had nothing but trouble. But the funny thing is, on Impulse or Starox site before it became GameStop's client, he got on that right away, and that's where I actually found his games first. But he's been trying to get on Steam now for at least a year or two. I think he's been trying to get Drox Opera on since Greenlight came out, which was it was definitely earlier this year, right?
Yes.
Yep. So he.
Yeah, so I think that there has been some issues too, like what's that paranormal game that came out? The one with like it's like a roguelike game where you're in a room and it's like first person perspective and you're shooting blocks at blocky monsters.
That Eldritch, are you talking about the one that looks sort of like Minecraft?
Yeah.
It was Eldritch, El something like that. Let's see.
I thought it was called Paranormal something.
I don't think so.
All right. Well,
There's
the
too
point
many
is,
games for us to keep track.
it's true, but the point is that they kind of create not a war, but like a declaration of how crappy the Steam Launch system was. And how they keep getting slighted. And I think this the story is that they actually got hired or they got help from a network saying, hey, we'll help you get your game on there for a certain cost, a certain like percentage, and like, okay, let's do it if you can guarantee us to get onto the Steam service. When I guess they found out that if you are part of Mark some sort of company or whatever, that you can't, or this kind of way, this kind of method that they went through, that if you do that, you won't be able to be accepted into the service. So, and I think that there was a big debate. I think the game actually did come out, but it came out with a little fanfare. The game seemed like it was a pretty cool bullet style rogue first person shooter block game, but what can you do?
Yep, and there's just so many games that it's just hard to keep track now.
Exactly. I think then that's another problem that they're seeing, because what, how can, especially, with that many submissions a day and so many people becoming budding game developers, and how easy it is to develop a game on your own. How many games do they have to actually go through and say, yes, this is good, yes, this is bad, without using popularity as the only means? Which is why, go ahead.
And of course, there's been some new competition lately. The Humble Bundle, they've officially have gone to the business of they're having their own store called the Humble Store, where each day they have a 24-hour group of games on sale. I think they say that I think 10% of all proceeds go to charity. And of course, on top of that, they have the weekly bundle and their specialty bundles.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be really cool. I don't think it's going to harm Steam. I think what's going to do is just getting lumped into the other sales of GOG and Gamers Gate and all those different sites that offer discounts. And I think Humble Bundle has a really good connection with the indie scene too.
Yeah, a lot of indie developers use the Humble Bundle or the Humble Store site for their game sales, right?
And I think that and that, like there's a couple of companies in Philly, like Cypher Prime, have dedicated Humble Bundles right for their games, along with Final Form games when they were still around. I think they also had, they're one of the first Humble Bundles to ever come out. And usually you're really profitable with Humble Bundles, but in their case, I think they lost money because they had to, because they went through an engine, they had to re-engineer it to work with Linux or something for Steam, and then the Humble Bundle itself kind of evened out or something, you know? I think that's why they folded.
And I think they spent like 5 years making that game.
Right. I mean, the art was beautiful, and the game was really, really fluid for having that many pixels, you know, out there. But again, I think that maybe they could have, you know, cut costs a little bit by using a pre-made engine of some kind.
Yep. And when the game came out, it was pretty much like a 30-40 minute game. Even if you want to replay for high score, there just wasn't much left for you to really sink your teeth into.
I think the, and by the way, guys, we're talking about a game called Jamestown, which is a bullet hell game. But yeah, the reason when I actually did some the beta testing for it, but the problem with that game is that it didn't have online multiplayer. So it was all about multiplayer, but you had to be wired, right? But it was only for the computer. So what do you do? You know what I mean? I mean, unless you have, you know, four wired Xbox 360 controllers, it's not as fun.
And if you don't have online multiplayer, that's such a killer for these types of shooter games. And we're seeing more and more games being developed for online mode. I mean, Payday, my friends just bought me the Nazi Sniper Elite game, which is just weird as hell because they added zombies to it, but apparently has
Right.
4-player co-op, so what the hell?
I heard it's very buggy though, the four-player co-op for that game.
Yeah, we'll have to try it with them at some point. I just tried the demo or like the first level last time where they showed Hitler being mauled by zombies, so there's that at least.
So does he come back as Hitler zombie then, or?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's a boss at some point.
I guess so, or maybe he still has his brain intact somehow, but now he leads the zombie army.
Which, of course, Nazi zombies is just, that's just evil on top of evil.
Right. Well, I guess they're evil in their life and afterlife, so there you go.
Yeah. All right, so I think with Nazi zombies, we can move on to our next topic. So, Ken, I know you want to talk a little bit more about some of the Kickstarters you were looking at. So, you said, I think, before the cast, they were running some trouble.
Well, I'll go to that in a second, but let's go with some good news first.
Okay.
So, from the other week, I talked about a game called Abduction, which is by Scion Studios, and they're the people that made Myst and Riven, along with Uro, which is the online version of the game. And they actually hit their goal, their base goal of 1.1 million in the last 3 days, right? And then they actually hit their stretch goal in the final minutes. I'm gonna talk about the final seconds. It ticked all the way to 1.3 million at like the very last, you know, as a small amount of time as possible. People actually saw the countdown click go through and they all like cheered. And that's the guy actually had to hang out. And there was a whole list of what they were doing and having Google Hangouts and Skypes with people and different things you can stream and watch them reactions as the countdown goes. A really cool company, really nice. Also, their building looks really cool. But yeah, so again, people really love Myst and I think they really put on that nostalgia for it. And the great thing about 1.3, by the way, the 1.3 million that they got for their stretch goal is that they're gonna do localization and Oculus Rift support. Aw, yeah. So another game for the Oculus library.
Have they
And
announced like any like possible launch dates for Abduction, or is it still,
no,
future?
still future. There's no way they would make. I mean, I think again, as we talked to other people that did Kickstarters, they don't want to give it out a date, a hard date, just a guess of like a year or a quarter or something like that. Just because you never know what's going to happen. I think so. That's really cool. But and I think in terms of bad news, there's a Kickstarter that I supported called Tac. It's called Tactical Haptics, which is the company, and I think it's called the Reactive Grip. That's what they're called. So the item is called the Reactive Grip, and what it is it's a type of haptic device, which is a device that gives you feedback to create like a realistic kind of immersion. Which is pretty much what the Rumble Pack does and all the controllers. And I think, and I believe, the person that's leading the company is one of the front runners that really push for Rumble and the older controls too. I think he was the starter of that tech, which is really cool. And what he's offering, again from last week, is a control that uses gyroscope motion along with Rumble to really create a sense of weight and movement. So you can use things like fishing rods and flails, and they really have a feel of something at the end of your stick, you know, of your controller. And it'll be compatible with things like the stem, which is a wireless version of the Hydra, and you know, the Wii or any other type of motion controllers. It's all compatible, which is really, really neat. However, the reason why they're stalling, because they hit 78,000 and they just completely flatlined for a week, is because of the high cost. So they came out with a device and it cost like $200, whatever, for like a single controller. $160 for the early bird, like $200 for the actual controller. And think about this, the stem, which I bought for two, for a base, two controllers and one tracking thing for your head or wherever you want to place it, $200. So you're talking about just an add-on to create that feeling for an exorbitant amount of costs, you know, so no one wants to do it. And then when they had two for early bird, the early bird cost for two was 300 and the normal is 360. So I think that's a big deterrent of a lot of people who are like, this is too high of a cost. I don't want to spend this much. Because they already spent, because again, I think they miscalculated because they didn't realize that a lot of people were complaining because they spent so much money on the stem. Now that's been the same amount or more for this add-on. And the biggest thing to me, and one of my biggest things that actually hesitate me, because I was so excited for this Kickstarter, is that it isn't wireless. I mean, the stem is wireless, that's why everyone bought it, but this one isn't. It's going to connect you again to a wire. So I think right now, and this is something they're trying to do damage control, and what they're doing right now is putting out a survey saying, well, who wants wireless over like software support and all stuff like that, or having their own like motion tracking solution. But people are like, we don't need that. We have the stem. We don't need you to do that. All we want is wireless. I think that every post, that every comment on the Kickstarter page is all about going wireless. If you do this, we'll spend more money. And I think as soon as they actually offer either a way for it to have a rechargeable pack at the bottom or have it attached to the hip or something, like a wire or something that goes down to your hip for a pocket, you know, whatever, battery, you know, a wired battery pack, whatever. I think that'll be something that people would still invest in. But right now, as it is, you pretty much render the stem useless then, or not useless, but bringing it back to what it was, which sucks. So I think what they need to do is, and this is the first time I've ever heard of a Kickstarter like doing a scramble like this. So I really hope that they do kind of cave in and create a wireless version of the dev kit. And I think there's enough pressure, and I think they're really seeing that they might actually fail their Kickstarter if they don't do this or offer some sort of solution.
And as we were talking about, that's pretty much one of my big concerns with a lot of these, I guess I'll call them like supplemental technologies, like the Oculus Rift, the Stem, and of course this, is that when you have such a high cost, by the fact of the matter is that you're not buying a platform, you're buying a device that's going to be supported by other games. So because of that, if you really want people to adopt it, you gotta make that cost as low as possible, because that's the only way you're going to get these adopters. And I think you mentioned last week that something like the Tactical Grip, that's something that's pretty much for enthusiasts only at this point. There's just no real appeal to it for regular people wanting to buy it.
Exactly. And I think the only one that's really got that idea is the Rift. They really want to keep it around 300 or lower. And as for the stem, their cost is a little high, but I'm sure the consumer will go down because the Hydra itself is only $90, right? I got mine for 40, as I said before. So this one should be, you know, right now it's, you know, 200 for the base set with the tracker, but I think the base by itself is 150. But I think when the condition comes out, it's probably going to be $100, which is still plausible for the experience that you get.
But like $200-$300, I think that's pushing it for the general market.
Oh yeah, you want to talk about niche? Talk about that Virtuex Omni, the running pad where you can place $500.
Oh
I'm
my
like, oh Jesus, that's more than a system. But I would totally. My goal is actually, if I'm going to spend that much money, I want to try it. So I'm actually going to PAX East this year. And I'm going to actually use it there. And usually they give a discount there, or a coupon, or a special discount for people that go to PAX. So hopefully maybe I can get down to 450 or something. If I really like the experience, if I think it's, you know, worthless or like the tech, because that's something that there's a lot of faith I put into these products, right? I feel because I've had the Hydra and I've used it before, and again, being my gripe being wired, I think that the stem was a good investment. So without, you know, hesitation, I back that Kickstarter. Tactical haptics. I love the technology. It's something brand new that you can never get in a consumer market. So yeah, I'll back that. Even if it is wired, at least I'll get one for development. But the Omni, I have to put all my faith into, because it looks so, it's that, I think it's the harness around you that might bring you out of the immersion. So there's a lot of questions I have about how it works, and if you do spin around in circles, what happens to all the wires? Do you pull up everything off your desk or what? You know what I mean? So I want to talk to the guys, I want to test it out, and I want to see if the investment's worth it, what's their future goals with it, and all that kind of stuff. Again, I think that you're talking about niche. That is the nichiest of the niche.
Are there any other interesting Kickstarters you saw since last week?
This is really random, but there was actually I was looking through 3D printers because that's another thing I want to buy. And there's actually one that lets you 3D print circuitry.
Really?
So there was someone made like a circuit board for a controller to replicate the SNES, and it worked perfectly. I'm like, wow, that's so cool.
That actually sounds really freaking awesome.
So you could just make your own, like, because again, before you had to like go to put an order out in Taiwan, get your stuff made, and then ship it back for like an exorbitant amount of cost. But here you could just get it done, and they've already been funded. Their goal was 20,000. They already raised 100,000, and it's only been 30 days, so it's only going to go up.
Interesting. Do they have like any like concepts for stretch goals, or is it at this point just, more money we get, the easier the development's gonna go?
I actually haven't read up on the stretch goals. I just know of the product itself.
That's pretty cool. I
So
know
there.
like 3D printing has been pretty big. I know when I was like, wow, a few years ago, I was touring like one of like the co-op development places in Philly, and they had like one of those big 3D printers just for like cardboard, creating like a 2D or like a 3D rendering of like whatever. I thought that was pretty amazing. But now they're actually doing like actual circuitry. That's gonna be really interesting seeing how that will have an impact.
Yeah, and also, I have friends that work at, I have two friends that work at Boeing, and they use 3D printers all the time there, and they actually created an aircraft with 3D printed material.
Nice.
And people think 3D printed stuff is flimsy. It's not. It's very sturdy. It's better than plastic, so there you go. But the cost is still pretty high on the actual material. Until that material cost goes down, 3D printers are still going to be pretty costly for a good one, not a cheap one. So yeah, but I think that's definitely going to be like the future. And they've already replicated, they already 3D printed a liver, stuff like that. So, and that actually, other than the capillary issue, it's completely plausible to use as a transplant for the future. That's really neat. So again, the reason I love Kickstarter over just games and stuff, and I know we're all about game design, but I really love anything that any new technology that comes out that you can never get in the consumer market because they're too wild of ideas, or they could never get a niche, or the marketing wouldn't be effective enough, is there in Kickstarter for you to fund. And there's so many ways to enjoy your games in a different kind of way. And I think, again, I'll be writing stuff on the site soon, and I'll be talking about it more, but just, my experiences as being a virtual reality enthusiast.
And this is really going, I think, have a pivotal effect on the game industry going forward with crowdfunding and Kickstarter, because we already saw indies really rise up over the last 4 or 5 years to now basically say, not only can you have the freedom to make the games that you want, but if you have a good enough idea, people will be able to support you willingly. I think it's really going to have a major shift in how the game industry will play out over the next decade.
I still think that, all the AAAs need to really cut back a little bit on this absorbent amount of budget, just because they can't, when you have such a high cost, you can't take risk anymore. So you have to make iterations. And I think Call of Duty Ghosts is finally hitting, it's finally hit its peak. It's going down finally. I'm not saying it's going to kill the craze, but it's definitely going to, I think people are starting to wake up on what they're trying to do, making Call of Duty a Madden version of the shooter.
I mean, that's what WB was trying to do with Batman Arkham Origins, and it wasn't a flop, but it was nowhere near the same quality as the other two games.
No way. It's still it's a decent game, but not a great game like the others. It's serviceable is the term I would say.
That's pretty much it. So to move on, I have two games I just want to talk about briefly that I've been playing this week. The first is I was able to get into the alpha for the Double Fine, their spaceship Dwarf Fortress type game. And it's called Space Base DF9. So I've been playing that, and it's pretty interesting. This was part of their Amnesia Fortnite design, right? And so for those of you who didn't know, basically Double Fine did a game jam where they came up with, I think, like 14 or 12 completely different game ideas, and then they had people vote on which one they would like to see be taken to a full game. And Space Base, I think, won the vote. I think maybe another game, they may be developing that as well.
Right. I think everyone really just wants them to make a Psychonauts too.
Yep, Psychonauts is definitely one of those games that I think it's probably as most wanted as Beyond Good and Evil at this point.
And Evil. Yeah. Same kind of failures on both those parts.
Yep, so with Space Base, it's still very, 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 very early. They just released Alpha 2 literally 2 days ago by the time you actually hear this podcast. And they just added in the fact that your colonists need food. Before, they could just work and work and work, and they wouldn't need to eat. So it's definitely getting there. As I said, it's basically playing off the concept of Dwarf Fortress, which is you build a settlement, you assign people to jobs, and then you basically sit back and let them go about their business, and only really intervening during emergencies or if you want to keep extending your base.
Right. I haven't actually tried it, but I heard it's for the serious gamer per se, or the hardcore, when the hardcore to the hardcore.
Are you talking about Dwarf Fortress or Space Base?
Dwarf
Yeah,
Fortress.
we had Jason McMaster on a few weeks ago, and he loved that game, but he said pretty much that's one of those games you're going to need to spend hours just to figure out how not to die. It's, from what I've seen of it, it's probably one of the most inaccessible games out there, probably ranking higher than, the Paradox games, and,
Crusader
yeah,
Kings.
and the Dominion series by Illwinter, I believe they're called. But
That's
people are loving Dwarf Fortress because it really has that depth. It's one of those games that you literally could just play forever. It's just that deep and complex of a game.
But visually, it's kind of
Yeah,
blah.
and I think there's no UI in that game whatsoever.
Yep, I think that's my big turn off. Even though it is complex, people like you, which is all up on game design, it doesn't really do anything for me. Like the desire to play it is not there. Maybe just to try it, not to play it for realsies.
And the game is, I don't think it's even considered done, Dwarf Fortress says. I think the guy is just keeps adding, just keeps building in his own spare time, and he's got enough money through donations to just keep working on it. So who knows if it'll ever be considered released.
It sounds like Overgrowth, you know that game?
No.
But it has like a humanoid bunny by Wolfire Games.
No.
No? They're like one of the first like alpha beta, sellers that, to start the kind of started the craze as an alternate way to fund their projects. And they're pretty much writing this really, really robust engine for their game, and I'm sure they can actually release it for other games too. So, I think a big thing is that they always have update videos of what's being added, so everyone that backed it can try the alpha builds of it, but also see what they're adding and kind of getting a real time of what is being done on the project. And I think it's really cool how they're doing it. And I think it's something they're making a good amount of money from it. And I think there's so much attention to every possible scenario in that engine. So I'm excited to see it when it's actually completed, but I have a feeling it never will be.
Yeah, that's one of like the pitfalls, I think. One of like the things that's easy to get so wrapped up with a game when you don't have a publisher bearing down your neck that you can just basically work on it forever. I mean, who's really there to say, no, you have to release the game holiday 2014? You can just keep working on it and working on it. But on the flip side, when those games are developed, they're usually some of the most creative and probably deep games out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think because it's their passion on, for everyone to view. Like, this is their perfection, right? But I think that there is that problem of it never being released. But I think, again, like Wolfire, if you just tell your audience what's going on, give them updates, explain everything you're doing, I think it's fine. But if you keep them in the dusk, you keep them in the, sorry, keep them in the dark, I think that's when they start getting really nervous and they feel they're being conned.
Yeah, but when you have companies that basically don't give you any updates for, 2, 3 months on end, it's very hard to, keep the faith up.
Yeah, I'm really worried about Medieval Mayor.
That has been, unfortunately, as it stands right now, it's put on indefinite hold, sadly, from Tilted Mill.
What's happening with Tilted Mill?
I honestly don't know. I've been trying to email Chris Beatrice. He wrote one of our first guest pieces for the site. He's also the CEO and lead designer, and he has not responded in the emails I've sent out. And he basically announced, I think last month or a few weeks ago, that Medieval Mayor was put on hold. And this was after literally 6, 7 months of no detail, no updates from Tilted Mill.
What's I mean, I really hope that, you know, they work out whatever issues they have, because I'm talking about ever since, like, they could if they released that game during SimCity, I think they would have made some mad cash.
Definitely.
So you want to see how it's really done, check this out.
And I still say they really should have gone to Kickstarter. They're one of the first indie companies to sort of branch out into becoming an indie. They were, Tilted Mill was formed by the Sierra, the Impression City Builder developer team. They were sort of formed from that, and they've been around since the early thousands, long before Kickstarter. So they have enough credibility, I think, with the market. But it unfortunately, neither of us have any connections to Tilted Mill, so we don't know the true story of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, what did they release when they were Tilted Mill?
They did Children of the Nile,
Hinterland?
they did
Okay, true
Hinterland,
enough.
they did SimCity Societies, some kind of like Civil War game, Mosby something or other, and a sequel to the Caesar game, I think Caesar 3 or Caesar 4, and that was pretty much it. And of course, they were going to work on Medieval Mayor, and they went dark. And this is actually not the first time that they went dark for. After Hinterland, they were trying to do a online free-to-play version of Children of the Nile, and that failed, and then they basically disappeared for 2, maybe 3 years. No one heard anything from the studio. A lot of us thought they went under and no one was saying anything. And then they popped up last year saying, "Hey, we're working on Medieval Mayor," and then nothing else happened after that.
Right. Well, I did write an article on
Yeah.
your site, so there you go. That's one thing you did. Yeah, I have a feeling that they folded, or there's just interact something. There's some issue with the company itself or the members. Maybe people are moving. Maybe you know, people are quitting. Who knows? It could be at the point where they don't have enough people to actually finish the
Yeah,
game.
maybe. All right, and the other game that I want to touch on was what we were talking about in the beginning, XCOM Enemy Within, which is the expansion pack to last year's Enemy Unknown. And this is a game that, as I wrote in my analysis, it was one of my favorite games of last year, but was also one of my most disappointing games. Because they did a great job modernizing XCOM's more, I would say, hardcore design, but they stripped away a lot of the depth and a lot of the choices that the series had.
I still, being new to XCOM, I still find it a pretty enjoyable game with a lot of stress, tension, and true strategy that goes involved in it. What do you think was stripped out that didn't need to be stripped out?
I think one thing was the overly linear campaign. In Enemy Unknown, they basically have a lot of set missions, so you're always going to be forced to choose between three different abduction sites. There's always going to be a terror mission at the end of the second month. And these kinds of things just made the game very predictable, and at the same time, if you're trying to beat the game on classic or impossible difficulty, you pretty much have to adhere to a very strict way of playing. For instance, if you lose your highest ranked squad guys, if you have a full party wipe in classic mode, you basically have to give up playing because there's no way for you to easily recoup that loss.
Can they like shoot you through like cover and everything?
Yep, I. Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean.
100% chance all the time.
Well, we actually can't. You can see the numbers of what your two hit is, but you can't see what the enemy's is. So, I'll give you an example. Earlier, I had one alien, the Outlander, out thing, like that energy creature. He killed three of my four guys while they're in full cover, while they're protected by the support smoke grenade buff.
Oh, there you go. That's how OP that one guy
And
was.
ironically, the first guy he killed was a guy who had a medal that gave him a plus, I think, 5 or plus 10 defense bonus as well. So he killed my most defended guy in one hit on his first turn.
Wow. Did you reset?
Oh yeah,
Restart or
that
just let him
was.
die?
No, I'm playing on Iron Man, so there is no restart.
Well, there you go. You lost him. How's that feel?
I mean, I beat the original Enemy Unknown. I played that classic, but without Iron Man settings. And I think I may just have to do that with this one. And the other thing, as you just asked me regarding things that have changed, I'm just not a huge fan of the whole cover system in Enemy Unknown. It just feels too much of an advantage for the AI. It feels like the AI is playing a different game than I am. And that's not how the original XCOM was. In the first XCOM, it used a system called time units to dictate basically how many actions a single character can perform on his turn. So you could have a character who could attack 3 or 4 times per turn if he used his least accurate shots, or he could move around. But in Enemy Unknown, they restricted it to only 2 actions per per character, and if you fire, that basically uses up all your actions for that turn. So what ends up happening for me is that the whole flanking system is just completely underutilized when you're playing on Classic and above, because the enemy can basically move around you and kill you in one hit, because their damage is buffed, I think, or I believe for some characters, their aim and their critical chance is up. But because critical chance is so important, if an enemy gets a critical on you, it's pretty much a one-hit kill on those difficulty levels.
I don't know. It sounds like a brutal, it sounds like a, you know, a very painful game, sadistic even, to play in that kind of mode.
And as I was talking about, it's so rigid because you really need to focus on specific base construction and specific researches, is that it pretty much comes out to this. If I survive until I get laser weapons, or at least until I unlock the fifth squad member slot, then I can basically go realistically 4 or 5 months of in-game time and not have too much of a problem. But if I lose a party on that first month or before the end of the second month, I basically have to restart the game. So I've been in this constant cycle of start the first month, have a random, you know, unlock instant, kill everyone, up, gotta restart. And just repeat that. I think I'm up to game 16 or 17 on the run.
Wow, that's a ton. But, you know, I still think that even though it's watered down, I still think it's a pretty great game in terms of what its competitors have been doing, which was pretty much nothing.
Yep.
And I think that it's really obvious that I think it's really cool too, or not cool, but it's kind of tragic too, but that the Bureau, right, the XCOM first or third person shooter game, got panned so hard. And they actually wanted to make that over Enemy Within, or Enemy Unknown, right? So I'm glad that they made it Enemy Unknown, and someone actually took that risk and be like, you know, maybe people do want this, and they actually tried it. I think that's really
and
neat.
That's why I basically bought Enemy Within day one, because I want to support them. I want them to keep expanding on that game, because if they can just get a little bit more detail into the tactical combat, I think it would be a perfect game for me. But right now, that's just such a glaring issue for me that it just leaves me somewhat disappointed at the game. So right now, I'm either forced to play on normal, which I won't find any challenge, or I play on classic, where I'm always this razor-thin edge of having to restart the whole game.
It looks like they're it's a little too extreme. Maybe they should add a medium also between the different modes. But I think it's hard for developers to really get a sense of what is hard to people. They can kind of just guess. Sometimes it gets to the point where it's almost impossible, depending on, you know, how you built your team.
And I guess the funny thing is I've heard people saying, oh, I found Enemy Unknown easy. I beat it on Classic and Impossible without, you know, any trouble. And I'm just sitting there going, really? You find nothing difficult about Classic mode?
Maybe they maybe they cheated.
Or they discovered, you know, the super secret, you know, instant win strategy that, you know, is so crazy and obtuse that no one will ever figure out.
Or they exploited all the bots or whatever, or all the different guys out there. Maybe they all got stuck on a wall that could just rocket them down.
So, do you have any games that you've been playing, Ken?
I think I've been playing again. I'm playing some League and getting into different versions of it, not just playing against people, which I'm doing pretty good, but there's still toxicity in the game. Not as much when you play normal games, but as soon as you get into ranked, I'm sure it'll all come out. So I'm actually surprised. When you actually played the game, did you play ranked or did you play regular? Because you can't play ranked without being level 30.
I'm pretty sure I played regular matches, but I played them so they were still counting win-loss records.
Oh, yeah, I see.
So I did not jump into any of the ladder matches. There was no way in hell I was playing League of Legends for any kind of ladder or competition purposes.
No, I understand. I definitely do find the game enjoyable with the different kind of champions, but it's really cool seeing how they do their free-to-play system, because everyone always, like, whenever anyone brings up free-to-play, they always say, yeah, League of Legends does it, right? I'm like, all right, well, let's see what it's all about. So I think the more you play, I think a lot of their, because of the variations of champions and different types of skins and the concept of people love personalization, I think they're making some mad cash on that kind of stuff. And they have some, but the thing is that the cost is still pretty high, but it's not astronomically high like Monday Night Combat. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think they're a good meter to gauge in terms of that market, if you look at it.
Yep, definitely.
And other than that, there's a couple of games I bought recently. One's called Sanitarium, and the other one's called Pathologic. And Pathologic is like a Russian adventure game, and Sanitarium is about a guy who loses his memory in a sanitarium. Both are older games, both they got from GOG on sale. and both I'm, you know, I've just installed and starting to try out. Also, I got I Have No Mouth. So what is it called?
I have no
Mouth,
mouth and I must
Stream.
scream.
Right. I also bought that too at the same time. And I believe that game has like a really, or it was promoted to having a very disturbing adult plot to it. That anyone that loves the adventure game scene or games that have that kind of near like a really compelling story, you should try that game out, even if it's messed up.
And speaking about GOG, we have to briefly talk about their crazy deal they've been having this last week, the Insomnia sale. They've been putting up games for super limited quantity mega sales. So if the game is $10, they may sell it for $2. But they'll only put up like 100 copies of it. So you have to basically keep track to see if the game you want is up there. And then they were running some games for completely free, like 20 free copies of the game. But they were basically crashing the servers because everyone was clicking buy now at the exact same time. And I was able to get the I Have No Mouth game for free. But I've been trying to score some other games and nothing's been happening. And it was pretty funny. They had this really, like, budget looking indie game, Jack King, something like that. It
Yeah.
was like this. And no one wanted to buy it, so it was up on sale for like 4 hours. And then at one point, people were just basically pity buying it just to get the sale to move along.
Right. Or people were like, Jack Keane sounds all right, sounds adequate. So
Someone wrote, you know, it's the greatest game of all time, you should buy it.
nice.
So that was crazy. And then, of course, after they sold those copies, it went up as a free sale and people bought it right away.
Nice. You know, it was actually a pretty cool series, Broken Sword. I actually didn't try till I got on GOG. But I think the best part of it is when you're playing. Okay, let's just talk about adventure games and stuff like that, like Jack Keane. I think there was like the snarky lead character is snarky white lead character is overplayed in all these adventure games because they have it in Broken Sword, they have it in Jack Keane, they have it in Deponia to a degree. And you know, I'm kind of sick of that kind of what's it called, cliche or whatever.
Yeah, I'm tired of the whole, you know, cocky character cliche too, and we see that a lot in, you know, TV shows and animated series as well.
Right. I like characters that have real problems, are realistic to a degree. Not like boring. I mean like understandable. Like April Ryan in Longest Journey. So or like Rosangela and in Black Belt Legacy.
And as a quick aside, I've been watching the Doctor Who series from BBC, so I've been pretty interested in seeing how they're going to do their big 50th anniversary, I think, next week.
Okay.
So that show has some pretty good writing. It's still somewhat aimed at kids, but at least they don't deal with a standard archetype for their main character. Because of the lore of the show, they've had basically 11 different actors play the same character. So each one basically plays it differently.
Well, that's great. That's why it lives on as it's a very interesting legacy. I think people look back on this series and feel like they were trendsetters in their own rights. And I mean, if it's still relevant to this day, I mean, it just shows how powerful the brand is.
Yeah, they're actually showing the actual 50th anniversary. It's going to be in movie theaters as well. So it's going to be, I think, simulcasted both on TV and in the movie theaters at the same time.
Oh, I see. I still haven't actually watched the new Doctor Who stuff, so I'm excited to see it.
If you have like on demand or anything from Comcast, they just recently put up the new Who 7 seasons on the on demand service.
I
So
think
you
it's on
can.
Netflix also.
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting to watch. I know I'm not even going to try to say, you know, whether the old series or the new ones are better. That would just, I don't want to open up that can of worms. But they've been showing, like, for each one of their specials, they show a classic episode. So one from, like, 1960s, 70s, and 80s. So it's interesting to see how the show evolved with the times.
Yeah, and I think again, as I said before, it's just one of those series that everyone just talks about, kind of like Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones that I have to watch, that I need to watch. So it's definitely talk about backlog of games. I also have backlog of movies and television series too.
I really don't watch as much TV these days, other than like Doctor Who and just like some random shows like on the Discovery Channel. But yeah, Doctor Who, I started watching the new series back when it was on Sci-Fi Channel, when Sci-Fi Channel was still cool, which was like I think 2003 maybe.
Okay.
And then they stopped showing it on there, and then I just started watching again this year when they started showing season 7 or series 7 of it, and then they stopped doing that in summer, and then they've just been preparing for the big 50th.
Yeah, and again, I think that are a lot of reasons why you have watched less TVs because everything's online. The streaming service exists. And bringing it back to the new consoles, they're all about replacing your cable box with their system, right? Having their on-demand services. And taking the cuts from the cable companies, they take the full cut themselves. Sounds like a good deal for them.
Yep, I mean, pretty much the only reason why I think most people have cable services is for like channels like HBO, Stars, and stuff like that, and Showtime, of course, because they're not going to be foolish enough to say, you know, you can just buy HBO for free. No, you want to get that with a cable package because they want you to spend, you know, the 100 plus to get that included.
Yeah, and I think the main major problem, at least especially in Philly, is that if you want to get Comcast internet, you need to get cable too. They just charge you extra.
Yep, that's what they've been at for years. When I worked there years ago, they've been. Oh, you all right?
I'm good. Sorry.
Yeah, when I was working there, I was able to see their pricing structure. So I saw how they basically would lower the price for each service depending on how many you had. So if you just bought internet, they want to charge, you know, 50, 60 a month, and then they would lower that just by a little bit if you got cable. But yeah, it's the basic business strategy. The more services you have, the more enwrapped you are in Comcast. So it makes it harder for you to cancel because, you know, if you have your phone, TV, and internet with them, you know, that you have to set up the whole hassle again with a new provider. But if you just had internet with them, then it's, you know, I just, you know, unplug your modem, plug in mine, and, you know, one, two, three, I'm done.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they're trying really hard to try to stop the progress of the internet and streaming services and all that. I mean, with their own proprietary stuff, but they'll do whatever they can to stop, you know, increased quality of their services. Because things like Google Fiber, which is like 1,000 megabytes a second, like ridiculous. Like that's amazing. We're stuck at like 2 megabyte downloads. That's insane. And we have the technology to do it. They just have no benefit. No
Financial reason to do it.
competitors. They have no reason to. They know that you're trapped, so you have to use their service.
And sort of like how, bring this back to the video game industry, that's really how early consoles were. I mean, especially they were so anti-indie. You had to basically have a major studio have your game on a console back then, much less in a store. I mean, a lot of developers and publishers had to bend over backwards to get their game into Walmart or Kmart or even GameStop and, you know, spend the extra money on retail space. So when the digital age came about and now we could just put a game on the internet and download within, you know, an hour, that was huge for basically changing the paradigm.
Exactly. And now, I'm not saying that GameStop will go the way of Blockbuster, but at their rate, I think they might. But they're definitely equivalent to the Blockbuster giant.
Well, I mean, basically, in the 90s, it was Blockbuster, then was Electron Boutique and Babbage's, and that was it. That was your sole way of playing
You
video
missed
games. If you
one
had
out,
to,
Funko Land. Aw, yeah.
Funko Land came later, right? Weren't they like late 90s?
No, they're mid-90s.
I didn't go to Funko Land until sometime in the mid-90s. I actually got, funny story, I got kicked out of Funko Land because I was in there too long without buying anything.
Good work. You should have bought a pack of gum.
Yep, and but as we saying back then, there was no basically digital distribution. You had to basically use these stores, and at the same time, because there was no competition, game prices were incredibly high. I mean, I remember Super Nintendo games were like $80, $90.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, what were you going to do? There was no other way to get your games other than these stores or from these developers, so they could charge whatever they wanted.
And developers even got a
But
small cut of what they're sold because the rest went to publishers, really.
And so, I mean, even though, you know, a lot of people debate that games back then were deeper and more fun, I'd rather have today's more open market than everything so closed back
Yeah, I don't
then.
even take the argument of being things being more open and fun. That's ridiculous. You can st in fact, you have more variety now than before, right? Because before it was only what the market dictated, only wherever the money, wherever the trend was, that's where everything went. That's why I had all those World War II shooters, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep, and especially with independent games and now with Kickstarter, I mean, the excuse that, oh, we can't make a complicated game now because no one's going to buy it, I think that's flimsy now because, you know, you can make a complicated game and say, hey, I'm going to put it on Kickstarter and people really want those old games again. Well, here you go. Fund my game.
Yeah, and if you have a great presentation, that also helps too. You can be your own marketing team without having spending the $15 million.
Yeah, and I mean these days you got sites. I mean, even GameWiz basically gives you free advertising, and we're seeing a lot of independent developers build up that goodwill. So I mean, you don't need to spend millions of dollars if your game's good and people like it. You could get mentioned on Rock Paper Shotgun, Eurogamer, or any of the other sites.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about GameWisdom again. Talking and actually listening to the podcast that we create with these different developers sells me on not only their game, but their company too, right? Because if the developer is that great of a guy and that inventive and that intelligent, then I'm sure he leads the company the same kind of way, right? So it helps me not only buy the whatever game that they're currently working on, but the games they worked in the past too. And I think that's good for all viewers too. And I think I said before many times before is that one of the greatest things of this new digital age of games is the personability of between you and the developer. That the way that you can directly contact them is awesome.
Yep, and I mean, as we said, it's such a great thing talking to the guys that we can see how these games are developed personally. And this is something that would have not been possible. They are working at, a major studio. I would have to talk to someone. I have to talk to their PR department or, some random person in marketing, and then hopefully they'll, get the email over to the guys. And most of the time, you wouldn't be able to do that, or you have to make a deal. How people talk about how IGN, they get some benefits for giving high reviews for certain games.
Right. And again, I think that, I think a really cool thing about just websites like GameWisdom too, and small and large, is that now you have multiples, all different types of opinions out there, bad and good, for you to use reference in terms of when you're actually making a purchase or believing in a brand or a company. It's there. It's great.
And I think with that positive note, I think we can start wrapping up, wouldn't you
Yep,
say?
sounds good.
So I know we tried to get a guest for you this week, but I think we had a pretty good
Yep,
conversation.
and I'm sure we'll have other people that come on, and they don't always have to be developers, but we'll definitely have a guest for next week.
Yep, I'm going to put out the call myself, hopefully today or tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be able to get stocked up again on
Oh
guests.
yeah, sounds great. Let's do it.
So, with that said, Kent, it was great talking to you for the last hour and a
Yep,
half.
no problem.
And as always, if you would be interested in contributing to Game Wisdom, either through writing a guest piece or being a guest on the podcast, feel free to send me an email. You can find all the information under Submissions Wanted on the front page. That way, you'll be able to see what guidelines we're looking for in terms of pieces, as well as just a direct link to our contact page. So, with that said, by the time you hear this, the weekend will probably be almost over. So, have a great week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.
Night.